Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
It's another episode of Call Him Poppy. This time, Pedro Martinez, the GOAT, the greatest of all time. The longest fingers in Major League Baseball history.
The most flexible fingers.
Yeah, show them. Show the camera.
Look at that. Look at that.
It's ridiculous.
Fingers, hands,
yeah,
everything.
That's not fair.
Do you feel like you're home right now?
I am at home.
You are home.
I'm a Bostonian.
You are?
I didn't know that.
I've heard you say it before.
I parked my car.
Yeah.
He parked his car. That's what's up right there. I love it.
Yeah.
Park his car.
Yeah, I remember you said after 2004, you said I wouldn't trade one of those for three anywhere else. Is that still true?
It is true. Bro, the mission I came to accomplish here in Boston, hey man, nothing would satisfy me more than to be here, say to my people, to my Bostonians, mission accomplished. I remember that morning. People were on top of the buildings and toilet paper rolling all over the place.
Somebody hit you in the head with a baseball.
Yeah, they did too, in the parade.
Yeah.
Right in the forehead.
Yeah.
But that was a fan that thought he was pitching to me, like yeah. I did to the batter. So. Yeah.
Payback is a bitch.
But I absolutely loved it. I continue to love Boston. I don't get enough of Boston.
I love that.
Yeah, you guys, I don't know. There was something that you put in the food that now I can't refuse Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Can't go away from Boston.
Yeah. So we were talking, David and I had a conversation in like March or whenever it was, where we were talking about the dynamic shifting in the Dominican Republic, where back in the day, everyone was walking around wearing Yankee hats. You guys changed that dynamic. When did you first notice that?
We are the Dominican Mafia.
Yeah.
We took over everybody. Yeah. Manny, David, and I pretty much captured the love of every fan out there. Not only were they seeing Dominicans having success, but what we represented when we were here in Boston. And this team also did an outstanding job at getting to the communities in the Dominican, opening the academy. The history between David and I and Manny is so great that everybody was able to kind of move away from everybody else and set their eyes on where the Dominicans were and what we were trying to accomplish. And I think everybody just bought into us being in Boston. Boston as an organization also did something you have never seen in any other place, which is like change the culture of what they had here. And that's probably why we won it, because Boston was willing to do whatever it took for us to feel comfortable. So with that came the Dominican flag with the case that I was posting every single day. With that came allowing a lot of Latinos to come and work at the stadium, work around the stores, be with us all the time. And at the same time, Boston allowed the Latin culture to come in, Dominican heritage. Students were granted, you know, scholarships and stuff like that. That really caught the attention of everyone in the Dominican, and they appreciated it so much. And that was it. All we had to do was just go out there, strike out 10, 15.
That's it?
Hit three bombs,
yeah.
And Manny will hit two more, mm-hmm. And there we were. Everybody was having fun.
I never told you this. When I bought my first car when I was 16,
wow,
I think that was probably
16. You bought a car?
16.
Man,
well, it was like $500.
He was rich. David.
I had a little paper route.
You got it.
So my first car, I had a Dominican flag draping across the back seat, with the Dominican flag was hanging from the mirror of my car, and that's because of you guys. Like, it was just like Manny, Pedro, Poppy. I had Dominican wristbands. In 2006, the World Baseball Classic, I bought a Dominican Republic jersey, not a USA jersey. people were like, dude, you're from the USA. I was like, yeah, I don't care.
That's exactly what I was trying to describe, but you did it in a better English.
Yeah.
And that's why probably all of the Dominicans feel like represented with Boston.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of the love you show for us, the respect, and willingness to change the culture. ¿Qué tú piensas de eso?
Jerry, let me tell you. When I talk to this guy right here, I got so much respect for him that I prefer to listen to him talk than me talking.
Yeah.
I know. You got to take me there, yeah. You know, Poppy. We were with Tatis last week, so I got to represent. anyway, so...
Sorry for interrupting your interview. Really quick.
Yes, real quick.
We just got an ad. We got to pay the Poppy's bills.
Come on, man.
All right, 1 second.
We'll be right back. Yeah. Okay, 1 second.
I noticed that to get ready for this interview, I saw you eating one of those Nutrisystem bars.
Oh, boy.
Which one's your favorite?
Well, man, you know, like, I'm confused now because I had tried, like, five of them, and I like all of them.
Yeah.
Like, the one that I just tried was the chocolate one. The chocolate caramel bar?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, you can actually lose up to 30 pounds in 90 days, which is insane for actual weight loss for men. You want a good deal on it? Nutrisystem.com/Big Poppy gets you 50% off. 50%? It's half off.
Ain't that some shit, man?
Look at that. 50% off for 2 months of food plus free shipping. It's Poppy's favorite bar. I think I'm probably going to have one myself. What did you say, the chocolate?
Yeah, chocolate.
Ooh, chocolate with the caramel.
Yeah. Reality is that, I mean, this is going to be a very interesting interview because me and Pedro, we got so many things to discuss. Like, when we get together, like, hey, let's go and have a coffee, and we stay together for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because we start talking about things back and forth, and it never ends.
People don't know about the Tingola. If I give you Tingola today...
We got to keep that indoors, by the way. My compadre, I don't know if you heard about his story when he first began his career, when he was in AAA with the Dodgers. Very interesting because we always talk about it. I would like my compadre to review that with me a little bit more when he got sent down. Listen to this.
You know, I didn't really represent that prototypical baseball player that back in those days organizations wanted to see. I wasn't really tall. I wasn't, you know, really an impressive body.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I wasn't very good looking. And I was really skinny.
Well, he was handsome. Mm-hmm.
But see, I had my brother Ramon, who's like 6'5", and this athletic body. And my brother was coming up through the system and with the Dodgers. And then they gave me the opportunity to sign from the Dominican. And everybody was expecting to see another Ramon. But no, I was the total opposite. I was small. I was skinny. I wasn't as tall. Even though for nowadays, my body would have been a perfect body, like a normal size kind of body. I'm 6 feet with tennis shoes on. So it's not all that bad, right? And, you know, the organization didn't believe really in what my body could probably do, you know, looking forward to a season, 6 months. But somehow, I was able to perform. Every time I got the ball, I was able to perform. And I remember that after having a couple of great minor league seasons, I was invited to spring training. With an opportunity to make the team. And I actually took less money for the opportunity to go in. And, you know, normally you have a basic salary. I had pitched in the big leagues like twice. And I went to spring training trying to fight for a spot in the rotation. And I went on to pitch better than everybody. Otto Hershiser, I'm giving you names. Mm-hmm. My brother Ramon. Pedro Astacio, everybody in the spring training, everybody in the Grapefruit League. And I had post records in the minor leagues, but they somewhat did not believe that I was going to hold in the big leagues. And I remember that I went in, I pitched better than everybody, pitched more innings, more outings, more everything. I was the Cy Young of the Grapefruit League.
And here I am. I told my brother Ramon one day before we were breaking camp. Said my brother, brother, what if they send me down? My brother was like, are you crazy? If they're going to send you down, they might as well send me, Otto, and everybody down. You're not going down. So I was really confident. My confidence went right up. And then the next day, I was the first one on the bus. You know, rookie, we were starting in Miami at the end of spring training. So all we had to do was take the buses from Vero Beach to Miami. And I'm sitting on the bus. I have my hanger. I have my bags, everything inside the bus. And I'm sitting there. And like half an hour before we took off, the Dodgers picked up another player in Rule 5 and sent me down. And I was just absolutely devastated. I was thinking, I broke everybody's record in the minor league. Minor league outstanding player of the year, the best player in the entire minor leagues. I've done everything they asked me for. I come over and I take less money than everybody else to try to make the team. I come over and pitch better than everybody in the spring training. And this is not enough. They don't love me here. And I don't even remember how I got off the bus. But when they told me, Pedro, you're going down, we picked up another guy in Rule 5, and you have to go down to the minor leagues because you have options. That was the time I felt like quitting. The only time, because I was a competitor. But that was the only time I felt like I needed to quit. And I was willing to quit. But then, as the bosses are passing by, I'm getting to the office to get a plane ticket to come to Dominican and leave baseball. Honestly, I was that disappointed. And my brother got off the bus and gave me a reality check, bro. My brother got off the bus and said to me, hey, my brother, you're right. If you decide to leave, you're right. If you're angry, you're right. Everything you're feeling, you're right about. And I understand that. But just think about one thing before you leave. When you were back at home and I was pitching in the minor leagues, I also had some great moments where I thought I should have been in the big leagues. But it didn't happen. And you know why I didn't quit? I said, why? You should have. They did what they did to me, you should have. He goes, no. I needed to find the meals for you, mom, dad, and the rest of the family. And that made me stop. Because I care about you and I care about the family. And that's why I didn't quit. Now, after this, you don't feel that you have the same responsibility, go on and quit. And you're right. You made the team. You were the best. But if you feel like you would have done that, if we had mom and dad and everybody struggling back there, then you go on and do it. And I had two tears that I could fill up this glass. Plunk, plunk. And I just stopped myself. My brother stopped me, actually. His words stopped me. That's why I value so much my brother, and I care about humans. And God had it for me somehow. And the rest is history. You watching me, you see me.
He don't miss a game.
He don't miss a game.
This asshole, he don't miss a game. He's always watching the game.
Every time.
Even when we are having the show. He's not watching it right now because the game is not on yet.
Not till 4. We got
I'm
time.
Telling you. But you know what? I always say that sometime, and I say it because of my own experience, it's good when those bad things happen at the beginning of your career.
Yeah.
Because what happened? He never took for granted anything.
Right.
He, every time he get the opportunity to pitch, he took advantage of.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, this guy was my teammate, and I would love to have him right next to me. I think I would have been a better player if I had Pedro every single day right next to me as being my teammate, because I call my compadre an open book. He have an answer for anything. And I'm not talking about baseball related. I'm talking about life in general. Like, this man right here, I got so much respect for him because he is never rushing it. He's such a peaceful human being. But the most important thing, he's always willing to teach.
Yeah.
Teach you how to do the right thing. You know what I'm saying? And when you go back to my compadre career, I would like you to take us a little over once we end up winning the World Series here, and then you have to live for another place. What was the feeling? I mean, you changed Boston. You changed this town. When I got here, things were different.
I used to have Bruins season tickets when I was a kid. Pedro got traded to Boston. My dad was like, "Hey, guess what? We got Red Sox season tickets." So I've had them since '98. And it was because Pedro came. I was like,
"I was in a big league." Yeah.
Daddy Warbucks. Yeah.
Mucho
dinero. Yeah. Daddy had it.
I was in a big league. Yeah, I know, a lot of money.
Hey, to pay for the season tickets.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
You tell me about it.
And probably good seats.
Right there.
Hey, that mucho
he
dinero.
Was really on our neck.
More than I had.
Section 10.
Yeah.
Oh my. Wow. Big league. You were the big league before we even got there.
Yeah.
Hey, but reality is that I used to come in town playing for Minnesota. And to be honest with you, it was a whole totally different ball game once my compadre got here and then they brought Manny. Man, it was something that you can feel it. In that stadium, you can feel it. But that happened, and then you have to leave town. What was the feeling like?
I was horrible. That was horrible. I made a mistake. I'm not a very good business person because I'm extremely honest and transparent when it comes to telling it the way it is. I remember I got a lot of heat. People saying, "Pedro, you should have never said that," because I called the Yankees my daddies. But that was a say that we have in the Winter League. In the Winter League, when you cannot beat someone or someone has your number, that's the proper.
Yep.
Right now, the Yankees have my number. It would have been probably the proper thing to say, but I said it like according to the way we use to say it in the winter. In the Winter League, if David has my number,
yeah,
I'll just say, "Oh no, David is me papa."
It has a different meaning. The way we say it in Spanish.
The way we say it in Spanish.
You know what I'm saying?
That's saying David has my number.
Yes.
And I can be that.
By the way, you were my daddy.
until you took me to the upper deck in Minnesota. Mm-hmm.
That was a lucky shot. You were my daddy. He used to give me 3 and 4 point shot and take me to his house to have some sancocho.
Yeah, a good food.
Mofongo with papa fritas.
Yeah, believe me, plenty of food in my house. And what happened was I was always extremely honest. I got to a point where I was a free agent. I told Boston that my best interest was to stay in Boston. When you're negotiating and money is in between, and that's the dark part of baseball. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't know that baseball has a dark side, and it's the business part. When you're in business, you don't want to mix in feelings. And I threw out my feelings. I said, "I love Boston. I'm not going anywhere. My best interest is in Boston. My family's here, so I don't want to leave Boston. I want to stay. I want to be a Bostonian until I retire." That's bad for business because I was giving Boston the opportunity to do as they wish in the business part of it. And at that point, it wasn't about the love we share for each other. It was just the business part. I harm my area. I hurt my negotiations by saying that. Because Boston came back, and instead of 3 years like I wanted to play for Boston and see what it was like, it wasn't a lengthy kind of deal that I was looking for. I was looking at least 2 years and an option, or 3 years and remain in Boston. And by saying that, Boston saw that as a weakness.
Boston saw that as an opportunity to offer me whatever they wanted,
and
I was going to take it because it was in my best interest.
Yes.
So I made that mistake, and Boston came over and didn't offer me a respectful contract like I should have gotten. And I said, you know what, I'll let you guys think, but remember, I just left my heart. I gave you a championship. I kept my promise to bring a championship for Boston, and I did it. I know that you guys are feeling just like I'm feeling. That was my hope. But in the business area of baseball, there's no mercy. Interest is interest, and you don't want to really spend money that you don't have to. And if you can take advantage of any opportunity, you take it with money. It wasn't that they didn't love me. They loved me. I loved them. But it was just business, strictly business. And they found a hole where they could get me. And I didn't find it honest, and I didn't find it fair that they would offer me what they offered me. 1 year and an option. And if I got hurt the next year and the year of the option, my contract would be non-valid. I found that like disrespectful, but I knew it was business.
Yep.
So I told them, you know what? I have offers out there. I'm gonna check the other offers, including the Yankees. I was offered by the Yankees.
Didn't this guy, you didn't win there.
They matched and they were willing to pass it.
Okay.
But I had given Omar Minaya an opportunity if I didn't work it out with the Red Sox. So I remained loyal to what Omar Minaya had offered me. I said, I like this contract. This is the contract Boston should have as an offer for me. If Boston doesn't come back with that offer, I give you first choice to go with you. And I gave my word, so I committed my word. This is the first time I ever speak about this. This is the first time I reveal
because
my negotiations.
I had the right question.
You did. Because you knew how bad I was feeling about not being in Boston. And David, more than anybody, knew it.
I was hurting, though.
I was hurting, too. I was hurting bad. I was missing my people. And then Boston did not match the offer. I gave him 15 days. The Yankees were like, Pedro, money is not the issue. The boss told me that. Write in that piece of paper, what is it that you want? I said, that's great. Thank you, boss. I really respect that. And I know you do whatever it takes to win. He goes, but let me ask you one thing. Remember I had the long hair, the long Jerry curl?
Oh, God.
He goes, Just let me know. Would you cut your hair if you ever play for the Yankees? I said, yeah, boss. Once I'm an employee, I'll cut my hair if that's the rule. He goes, okay, then. We don't have to talk anymore. Just write on the piece of paper what you want and what you need. And if you want to be a Yankee, come over. And I said, you know what? I'm still waiting on Boston, but I'll give you an answer later. But I had already committed my word to Omar Minaya. And I followed
him. Who was the GM for
the Mets. First year and first Dominican ever to be a GM.
Yes.
And I wanted to give him an opportunity to kind of have a splash as he was landing in New York. But I was deeply hurt. It was unfortunate because I never felt like I should have left Boston. I had a great time, make no mistake about it, in Queens. And I almost took that same team that I was given to the World Series, too. Mm-hmm. It was just, we didn't click towards the end, and some of us got hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was a real good team we put together, and we almost made it to the World Series as well. And the fact that I had to leave Boston was like the biggest disappointment I ever had, because I still feel like I belong to Boston and Boston belongs to me.
So Black Buffalo, shout out Black Buffalo, they're all about charging ahead. And I'm curious, how difficult was it for you to move ahead knowing that your guys were still there in Boston? Like, you had an exciting opportunity with the Mets, but David's still there, Manny's still there. The guys that you literally just, like, you got there in 98, and your word was, I want to win a championship here.
Yeah.
And then you did it. It took years. You got it in 04,
mm-hmm.
and then you didn't even get to have, like, the victory lap. Like, because you were with the Mets. You had the parade. But and that whole next year, like 05.
I got square in the forehead.
Yeah. The it's like 05. You guys must have felt like the Beatles. Like, everywhere that you went, it's like, well, there's the 2004 Red Sox. That's the team that got it done. And you didn't get to be a part of that 05 team. Like, how difficult was that for you to move forward with
You know what? Moving on wasn't really all that difficult. Adjusting to new friends, new faces, you know, the camaraderie that we had in the clubhouse was the most difficult thing to face. I know David was also homesick or sentimental about it. Manny started running into trouble because I kept Manny. I knew how to handle my team. I knew how to handle Tech. I knew how to handle everybody. D-Lo. I kept D-Lo under my eyesight all the time. I knew those guys so well. They respected me so much. It was my clubhouse. And I felt like I was protecting my entire group of younger brothers that I had. For me to step out, it was like one of the most disappointing, you know, feelings that you can get in a career. And I believe that, you know, having to see David and Manny, like in Boston without me, was like, something is missing.
Yeah.
Hey, exactly how I feel. To be honest with you, that's exactly how I feel.
Something didn't sit right. And we are professionals. We still have to go out there and perform and go on with your life. But there was an empty feeling in both sides, in my side and in the Boston side. And I couldn't take my eyes off of Boston, regardless of what happened. And then we happened to struggle the very next year here in Boston. The entire team struggled. Yep. 05, 06, struggle. And then in 07, they finally kind of put it together and David took over the role of the leadership, and that's when everything changed. But yeah.
All right, Poppy, Black Buffalo. You know I'm a Black Buffalo guy. I've always been a Black Buffalo guy. You used to dip when you played,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, you were big into
that's
that.
That's how I used to get my groove on.
Yeah, me too. So, you know, it's how I kind of like, it's my ritual. It's how I kind of chill a little bit. Black Buffalo, it still has the nicotine. But it's the same ritual, tobacco-free. Mm. If you're trying to still have that same ritual, Black Buffalo is the what you need to go with right here. Use the promo code BIGPOPPY at checkout. 20% off your first order at BlackBuffalo.com. That's a deal. 20%.
20% is 20%, man.
It's a good deal.
Well, you were right. When I first got here, Pedro's present and a clubhouse made me feel like I had been part of it, part of the clubhouse for a long time when I first got here. That's why, you know, as a player, when you fool out your confidence levels like that, you automatically begin to be part of the pack. You know what I'm saying? And that was Pedro were doing. Whatever come into the clubhouse and see how the best pitcher in the world handle business as a teammate, that's it.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for. You know what I'm saying? How can I keep up with this guy? That's what you ask yourself as a player. How can I keep up with this guy? I want to be part of that chemistry. And that's how you line yourself up to be part of it. But another question that I have for you, my compadre, going in the same line. You go to the Mets, and then you go to Philadelphia, one of the most... one of the city that the criticism out there is like crazy. I never thought about that. But you play in Boston, you play in New York. Yeah. How was it going into Philadelphia? How you feel about yourself going to play for that city that you know how they handle the business with the struggle?
You know how I am. I love to dare me. I love to dare me. I love to, you know, have a challenge in front of me. I should have been a daredevil, like, you know, if I was like and one of those games that they have, crazy Olympic games and rollerblades and stuff like that. I would have been a daredevil if I was one of those guys. But in baseball, I also love the challenge. And as a baseball player, Philadelphia represented the challenge. Boston represented the challenge. I played in Montreal, and I was able to play right after Montreal in Boston. Boston is the most passionate fan base in all of baseball. Yes, the most loyal fan base in all of baseball. But yes, the more demanding fan base in all of baseball, and they know their baseball. And once I got my feet wet here in Boston, I felt like nowhere else would I have more demands, would I have more eyes on top of me, would I have more pressure to perform and to handle myself outside of, you know, the baseball field than in Boston. When I got to New York, piece of cake. New York is divided between the two teams, and it's so spacious and so big. You have enough space to run around. But I demanded out of myself a lot more than people know. I wanted to have a challenge in front of me all the time. Philadelphia is a city that reminds you that Boston is there, that New York is there. Philadelphia, unlike New York, is smaller. And the Phillies are a big deal in Philadelphia. But I wanted the challenge. I wanted to have the opportunity to play for a team that would give me an opportunity to win in the National League. At that point, the Mets didn't want me. They didn't want my services. Or not that they didn't want it. They wouldn't pay for me at the level I was asking. Philadelphia was in contention. I saw a great opportunity to win a World Series in the National League. There's two things that I only lack in my career. Is the MVP trophy.
Which you should have won in 99.
Exactly.
Two guys left you off the ballot. It was the dude from New York and the dude from Minnesota.
Yeah, LaVal Neal and George King.
Yeah, I love that you know their names.
I know their names because they never thought I would be in this spot.
He's a dinosaur. Yeah.
Nobody knew that me and David would be in the platform or television to say what we want and to be able to give it back to some people.
Right. The New York guy, I believe, his justification for it was that I don't vote for pitchers. And 10 years before that, he voted for a pitcher. So it didn't even make sense.
He voted, and later on, he voted again.
Yes.
After I was done.
Correct.
That's when you don't want to say you're racist. But sometimes you have to think, there are people that are racist, because how can you give votes to people that didn't belong in the MVP contention to just harm someone individually? And I had nothing against those two guys. I've always been a professional. I've always been able to grant interviews. I've always been able to grant answers to your questions. And I don't know why two persons like that would just pick on one single person to just do that, to be that bad. Out of 20 places that they have, each one of them, they couldn't give me a 19th place vote.
Then you would have won.
Exactly. Because if I was to get a vote from either one, it was that obvious that everybody wanted me as an MVP, that if I was to get, out of those 40 spaces, one vote from one of those guys.
MVP.
MVP.
Cy Young.
Cy Young, back MVP, Triple Crown.
Yeah.
Everything. I would have wiped out the entire
tickets.
See that?
Yeah.
And that's probably why. But going back to Philadelphia, I saw my opportunity to win in the National League, which is the other trophy I don't have. Even though I was National League champion, I wasn't World Series champion. Mm-hmm. So those are the two trophies I don't have in my house. But everything else,
I might just make you one and send it. I mean, the MVP award was yours in 99. But also, not only that, would you say that your 2000 season was better than 99?
They rank right there.
Yeah.
Because the 2000 season was very unique according to the way pitching was, according to the way offense was. And I just didn't grant anybody too much. And I didn't grant too much to the entire league.
You were 2.5 runs under the league average.
Exactly. That's probably a record.
Crazy.
That's a record.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane.
It is insane. And you know, I would take either one of those seasons. They both rank in MLB as the top two seasons individually, back-to-back. Either one could be as good as the other. So
yeah.
It makes no difference between 99 and 2000.
David and I were talking a little bit about like the business side of like the Red Sox philosophy when they pay guys and when they don't pay guys. And it's pretty apparent when they'll bring guys in and they perform and they're less likely or willing to pay those guys who are in-house versus like, oh, this guy succeeded over here. Let's throw some money at him even though he's unproven. He's never played in that market before. So there's been multiple times where David was coming up in free agency where either they just weren't respecting him in the right way, they weren't coming to him with an offer right away, more than once, and he still stayed. Did you ever consult Pedro with, like, how should I approach this? Like, is there life for me beyond playing in Boston? What were those conversations like if you had them?
I don't even need to create those conversations. He has it for me, you know what I'm saying? Because, like I say, my compadre is the type of person that he wants everybody to do well. He wants everybody to be fine. He wants everybody to have no issues, you know what I'm saying? So whenever he will see something coming, he will give you his best advice. That's it. That's the type of person he is. You know, he answers. And
you know, Boston as an organization doesn't really understand what we built. They don't understand what I was able to supply for the organization. Even when I wasn't here, the job I did would have been the job of an executive that has a real good relationship with the players. Like, I would talk to players. I would get my phone and call those players in the different moments when they were struggling, when they were going through negotiations. I was able to supply Boston with the type of work that now I do with the organization.
Yeah.
But I was just in a different organization with a different uniform and in a different place. But I was always able to talk to David, keep him relaxed. Sometimes, you know, Boston can get, especially on the media side, under your skin.
Yeah.
It is crazy. But I was able to kind of supply that breath of fresh air when things weren't going right for David, or David was going through some pain, aches and pain that we go through, and about to lose his mind, about to snap at one of those reporters that can get under your skin. And I was able to supply for David, for Manny. I remember Manny having those incidents in the dugout. And I was like, oh my God, if I was there, that wouldn't happen.
Right.
Because I knew how to handle Manny. I knew what to do with Manny. That's another sad part of our legacy here in Boston. I should have never seen Manny leave the way he left Boston. Boston dies for Manny.
Yeah.
Manny dies for Boston. David the same way. If people just get to know what's inside those guys, it's like inside of me. We were never really open to talk about our personal life. But I'm as passionate as I am with my wife and my kids about Boston. I love Boston that much. And you know, when I was out and I saw some of the things that happened here after I left, I really regretted not being here. And the organization doesn't know what some of us bring to the table sometimes. They don't recognize it. They don't know it. They don't know, why is David taking less money to stay in Boston? Well, maybe there's someone whispering in David's ears, David,
yep,
you're right there. You
thank
have
you,
a,
by
Hall
the
of
way.
Fame. No, not only I brought him over, as a scout, the Red Sox owe me some money.
Yeah, they do.
Because
I owe you some money.
I went and got this guy, and I also really went under the table to get Manny too.
Yeah, yeah.
So they still owe me some money, and as a scout, they never paid me for the best first round pick I ever brought over.
First round pick overall.
Overall.
Because we've heard that story from David before,
yes,
about how you just pick up the phone, you call Larry Lucchino, hey, sign this guy.
I imposed myself.
And then it just happened. Like, I want to hear the story from you.
I used my ranks that night. I happen to be on the beach. I have four wave runners. And I have a Ferrari, and I'm like on the beach all day riding the wave runners. And here I come through the streets of Santo Domingo. and I got hungry. When I left from the beach, I was hungry. And I just went passing by the restaurant and, hold on, guys. Let's just stop here. Let me grab something to eat. I find this gentleman right here talking on the phone. And I had pretty good companions when I was coming over. And I said, David, I have pretty good company. You want to come over? And he's like talking on the phone. He goes, hold on. He's got the phone.
He's always on the phone.
No, but he was talking to Minnesota at that exact moment. And I come in and I'm like, come over. And he's like, hold on, I'll be right there. And I'm looking through the glass from the restaurant. And this guy, all he does is laugh. This big, wide, you know, croc smile. Like, and I'm like, okay. And then I see this guy, he takes the phone and he's like, I'm like, what's wrong with the big boy? And I go, Compy, what's up? He goes, can you believe that? I took 200 at-bats, and I hit 20 homers, and these people just released me. I was like, great.
great.
I'm like, great. But he gave me this look. And you know how he goes?
What you mean, great?
Yeah.
What you mean, great?
I got just no had a job, daughter. Man.
I got no job,
cut
and I just
bullshit.
Had a daughter. Yeah, I just had a daughter being born not too long ago. I don't have a job. What do you mean, great? I said, no. What I'm saying is, I can take you to Boston. You watch. I'm gonna call. So I use my ranks, and now I'm feeling bad because I start calling everybody. Nobody picks up the phone. And the guys here just released. We all worry because I said I'm gonna get you to Boston, but I can't get anybody. I wanted David for Boston, but I couldn't get a hold of anybody until I finally clicked at about 1 a.m. All the waiters and everybody's like, are you guys ever gonna go? Like, they fixed everything and it's just me and David trying to get this phone call going. Didn't eat, didn't drink, didn't do anything. And I finally, the traveling secretary.
Jack
McCormick. Yeah. And I go, Oh, Jesus Christ. Pedro, what are you doing calling at this time? What the heck is it's 1:30 here?
7 p.m.
It's 1:30 here.
1:30 here. I'm about like, to wake up.
I'm like, Jack, we need to sign David Ortiz. He just got released from Minnesota, and we need a first baseman. David Ortiz is available. Tell Larry and Theo to sign him. Tell him I want him in the team. And like, oh, okay, Pedro, they're in California right now. But I'll make sure I tell them early in the morning. I'm like, okay, Compy, tomorrow morning they're going to call you. You're going to be with us. So the rest is history. But Jack McCormick was an angel in his house that was able to pick up that phone call. And the rest is history about David and the World Series and how big he is here in Boston. And I also name him Big Papi. When they were saying, hey, Pedro, who's your daddy? I said, you better worry about Big Papi instead of worrying about daddy. Daddy's going to be okay, but you worry about Big Papi. You can't get him out. And there is Big Papi and the daddy, the goat.
The goat.
Right here.
Yeah.
So we got to have a toast over that.
Let's have a toast to that. Shout out to Whistle Pig. 100% rye.
Whistle Pig.
Thank you, Pedro, for getting Poppy to Boston. Appreciate that a lot.
Whistle Pig whiskey. I know we did a toast with Pedro during the interview. I mean, like, you love the smell of it, right?
I love it, man.
It's smooth. Look at that. I love that. Mm. Yeah, we did a nice little toast with Pedro during the interview. It's 100% rye. Smooth, clean, goes down easy. Love the taste. Get your own bottle of Whistle Pig. Go to whistlepigwhiskey.com right now.
You're not the only one that really loves the fact that I brought Papi over.
A lot of people like that.
Hey, the entire New England.
Yes.
Yeah.
They love me.
Well, I was going to ask Pedro about 2003, because you get there in 2003. Grady Little sometimes will put out a lineup card. No David Ortiz. No Papi. Who fixes that problem sometimes?
Woo!
Pedro Martinez.
He did.
True or false? You saw a lineup without Poppy on it, and you went in and you said, no, we're actually...
I got really angry.
Yeah.
I got really angry, and I went to Grady Little, and I was willing to fight that day, Grady Little, my good friend. I said, Grady, who did this? Why was it that David was in the lineup and you took him out? He goes, well, some teammates complained that David left yesterday with you and didn't even wait to speak to the media. I said, David has won a bat in 2 weeks against a nasty lefty that you brought him over. When you had David playing every single day, or you had him playing, starting a game, David is hitting 360. And David, you just give him one at bat against who knows who every 2 weeks. From now on, I want David playing in my games every 5 days. Losing or winning, David has to play in my games. So I went to Grady Little, and Grady said, you know what? I needed a big horse like you to back me on this, because front office wanted Jeremy Giambi playing on top of David. And Jeremy wasn't doing well, but got all the at-bats. And David was doing well when he was starting the game and wasn't getting playing time. So I said, David is going to play at least once a week every time I pitch. And Grady said, I needed your support for something like this. And I said, the reason he left is because I pitched 8 shutout innings, and by the time I got to the shower, we had already given up the lead and the game. In the 9th inning, we lost the game. I left it 2-0, and we lost it 3-2. Home run, Jim told me. And I told David, David was frustrated over not getting a bat, and then he got that a bat, and he swung at 3 pitches, and he was strike out. What was David going to talk about? Oh, I took 3 swings, and I swung and missed. And I wasn't talking to the media because there was a little bit of a miscommunication between the team and I. And I decided not to talk to the media because I wasn't going to approach the problem publicly. And so they said, we're going to keep it quiet. You keep it quiet. So we kept it quiet. So I didn't speak to the media. I just left a quote about how I felt that night. And some of the teammates were like, oh, Pedro and David, we left in the limo. Yes, we left with the bling bling. We left in the limo, and we left before everybody left.
Because and the music popping.
And then we were like having a nice bottle of wine. We were having all that. Some people felt bad because we lost the game, and we weren't there to kind of mope over the loss. And they blame it on David. Oh, David left, and Pedro left, and this and that. No, we left after the game. The game was over. I pitched 8 complete innings, left it 2-0, and we lost the game in the 9th. We showered, and we left, and I took him out to dinner. And then the next day, supposedly, because of that, they took him out of the lineup, and that pissed me off. Yeah. So I went and got him Grady, got on my teammates, and I said, if anybody has anything to say, say it to me. I was the one that took him out to dinner. And if anybody has a problem with David playing, say it now. Nobody said it, and the rest is history. The man went on to hit 508 homers.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the big 500?
Yeah.
There we go.
Compay, first game back at Fenway Park.
Oh. With the Mets.
Pitching for the Mets. Talk to me about your feelings.
I was...
Because I'm going to confess something after you say what you had to say.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something that I had never said on camera.
Sam,
I'm going to say it.
You go first. I'll go second about that game. I have something as well.
You know, I had gotten hurt in Florida. I was hurt. I had a bad hip, and I couldn't pitch. But I decided that I was going to start the game. Start the game just because I was in Boston. I was badly hurt. And actually, I didn't take myself out of the game. I came out of the game because I could not pitch. But I wanted to see Boston again. And having to face David and Tech are the 2 at-bats that I just clearly remember. Tech, my battery mate. I swear to God, I still remember Tech's face. It's like... I don't want to hit against you. I don't want to. He was sad. He was almost like crying.
Can I say, son?
And David, when I saw David, David didn't want to even get into the box. It's like he's moping around, and nobody wanted to hit against me. Nobody wanted to do anything against me. It was like it was like a mismatch. They didn't feel, they didn't have competition. I didn't have it. I had feelings. But I'll tell you what, though. I got the warmest, loud sense of satisfaction and appreciation from the Boston fans that any athlete can get. Bigger than the trophies, bigger than the award, bigger than everything you can get. The way Boston received me, I mean, it didn't matter what I did. I was just going through the motions. All I wanted was to see my fans, see how they wanted to see me. It's too bad I wasn't able to compete or be the Pedro they knew, but I was so hurt. I went straight to the DL, and I only pitched like two innings because I couldn't pitch. I couldn't pitch, and I don't think they got to me. They hit more against me because they were feeling sad. They didn't want to hit against me. They didn't want to have a homer, a hit, anything.
Mm-hmm.
They looked sad.
It was very emotional for me. Let me tell you why. I got 10,091 at bats, career, play appearance. And I remember donating four of them. Two of them were against Jose Lima, my compadre who passed away.
Yeah.
God have him in heaven. And the other two, it was that day. And let me tell you how Dominican players go by the business. We talk trash to each other. So when we face each other, we want to whoop each other's ass.
Yeah.
Like, this is something that goes like, you got to see when we get together. Remember you hand that breaking ball against me, I got your ass, I punch your ass out. That's how we talk shit about each other.
Yeah.
So when we play, we had that really good connection, but when the competition began.
Yeah. It's all out.
It's all out.
Mm-hmm.
That day,
I didn't want to compete.
I was like,
he didn't want
like,
to compete.
It was a weird feeling. It was my focus was not there.
Yeah,
I have emotion going back and forth.
And you they knew it too. I told them I'm hurt.
It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy feeling.
I told him and Manny, I'm not able to pitch. I'm only gonna do it so that the fans can see me again.
Yeah.
They knew I was hurt. They knew I was going to the DL.
It was crazy. It was crazy.
I was going to be placed on the DL before I came over. I didn't even run those 5 days. I didn't do anything. I couldn't move.
Yeah.
I just went to show up for Boston.
So I was there that night, and I was there because, so I used to work at this sneaker store, and I got written up because I called out too many times and was late too many times. And if I was late or called out again, they were going to fire me. So I was like, well, Pedro comes back tonight. I want to go to the game. I have to be there. So I show up for my shift, and I was like, what do I do? So I go up to the breaking room, the break room, and I have a cup soda with ice cubes in it. I took a tack out of the bulletin board. I poked myself in the arm with it, took an ice cube, and held it over my arm so that it was red and puffy. And I went up to my manager and I was like, I just got stung by a bee and I'm really allergic. I need to go to the hospital right now.
You know what?
Get the fuck out of here.
That's
and I went to the game.
That's a good one, though.
I had to be there. I mean, I was either going to get fired. I mean, I would have gotten fired for Pedro, but that's the type of stuff the Boston fans were doing to go pay their respects to the GOAT.
Pretty sick.
I'm smart, man. I'm smart.
Before we wrap it up, David got his number retired the year after he retires. How proud were you in that moment, being like, this is the guy that I handpicked to bring here. Look at the legacy that he built here. His number's retired. It was the fastest number's ever been retired in team history. What were you feeling that day?
I felt like a proud papa. I felt like I was, I had so many reasons to be proud, to be happy. For the first time, I I felt like, man, this is one of the best things I've ever done in life. Because it wasn't really about the number being retired, but it was how God used me as a bridge to better someone else's life. And to watch David retire, 3 World Series, MVP, I mean, the amount of money he made. When I remember that conversation, I don't have anything. I have a daughter that was just born. I mean, I don't have a job. Someone that hadn't even saved any money. Because what we make in the first year or two, it goes right back to building a house for the family, or goes right back to necessities that we have back in the Dominican. You don't make money the first 3 years. Everything, there's 0% of Dominicans that have come from middle to upper class. Everybody that made it through baseball, everybody has been from the lower poor community. Nobody has anything. All the players that come from there are poor, extremely poor. And I knew David's case. And to see David so successful, to see him on top of Boston, to see that so many things that David achieved, I was like grateful for the opportunity to have been that bridge that closed the gap between the Red Sox and his career and his life. To see his life so well realized. It's like, you don't have words to describe that, but it's such a sense of pride, but at the same humbleness that you feel. Like, thank you, God, for the opportunity that you gave me to bring this man to this position where he is. And he did everything. I didn't do shit. But he did what he had to do so that I could feel good about that specific moment where I decided that I wanted him with me.
Let me tell you something about Pedro. I'm playing for Minnesota, right? And I had a broken hand. And I never gonna forget about, you know, we're just 21 years old in the big league, you know, talent, but with a broken hand and an organization that things were a little shaky, you know what I'm saying? And this man finished running, doing his pole-to-pole thing.
Pole-to-pole?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he just sit down to talk to me about life experience and things like that for like an hour. And I was just a kid. And that was the day that I really, really fell in love with my compadre. And it was because, do you know how hard it was to have a 5-minute conversation with Pedro Martinez at the time? And he sit down with me and we talk like we were trying to catch up with each other. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And that was like, that was one of the things that, you know, I never erased out of my mind. And it was because that's the role model that you would like to be. The guy is on top of the world, famous, best pitcher on earth, making money, and then he takes his time to do things like that. And not only with me, he did it with everybody. Like, there's not one Dominican player that does not respect this man right here, because he took his time with all of us. You know what I'm saying? That's the Pedro Martinez I know. Mm. And that's why, you know, when he talk, I'm nothing but here, man. This is your show.
I mean, I believe it, too. I mean, like, the fact that... technically, did someone get their number retired in between you guys? Or are you guys next to each other? I got it
retired, and then David came right after me.
Yeah, like, how, like, poetic is that? That it's just those two guys are just, like, right next to each other.
That's crazy.
I tell him all the time, God put us together in a very funny way. I come from the beach. I stopped at that restaurant. At the moment he's getting released, we connect each other right there. Then baseball is resuming its normal life. And here I am in the middle of everything so that David can get an opportunity to play. You think that if anybody had any idea that David was going to do what David did, David would have spent one day without playing here in Boston? No, but nobody had any idea. And I happened to stop in the restaurant at that time, specifically getting released right there. Then he comes on over here, and I just stand up for someone that I don't even know if it's going to be successful. But I just wanted to be fair. I wanted the manager to be fair to him and give him an opportunity to, whether you're going to fail or you're gonna have success, give him the opportunity. And then you can say whatever you have to say. And I happen to be that person that gets really around this person. I didn't know he was going to have all that success, to be honest.
Yes, you do.
I knew you were special, but I didn't know that you were going to take it to that level. And that's why I am humble to say, that God was the one that linked us together. Not me, not my decision. It was God, so that he could be in the position he is and he could be who he is. I was only the missing link. And that's all I want to say about this relationship. I was the missing link for this fruitful life that he's living. And that's it. And I don't have anything to say whether it was because of me. No. I appreciate what he says, that I gave him advice, that I spoke to him and kept him positively thinking. I just feel blessed to have had the opportunity to have him linked to me somehow.
Same.
I got five rapid fire questions for you.
Ooh, five.
Yeah, five, real quick. First one, best game you feel like you ever had?
The best game I ever had was one where the manager asked me to pitch at least 8 for the team. I mean, when it comes to feelings, that's my feeling. Manager told me on the plane, I used everybody today so you can go 8, if not all 9, in Kansas City against a bad team. And Kansas City scored 5 in the first and 1 in the second. And I went on to pitch those 8 innings that he demanded. And then Wakefield came over and closed it with the knuckleball. That was when it comes to personal feeling.
Yes.
When it comes to dominance, I think the 17 Yankees in Yankee Stadium was one game that could never go in a regular season game. Postseason got to be the game in Cleveland,
yes,
where I came in relief. And that's what I was trying to explain to Boston. You don't measure heart. You don't measure what drives you. And those are added values that some players need. I risked my career at a young age. I was young still in Cleveland, hurting. Everybody knew I was hurting. And the very next game I pitched here against Roger Clemens was even worse. I was feeling even worse than that day.
13-1.
Exactly.
Game 3.
And I won it. But that's the most painful game I've ever played in my life.
Superstar. So, what's up?
What's up?
You finished?
Go ahead.
Oh, I thought you was done.
Yeah.
Superstar batter that you know that every time you see him, it was going to be a strikeout. Every time you face him. I know there's a lot of them, but...
Yeah.
Give me that one that you really like.
I felt like I was going to strike out all
yeah.
the time. Jay Buhner. I knew Jay Buhner most likely would be a strikeout. And you know what? I didn't feel uncomfortable with Junior either. Ken Griffey. I didn't feel uncomfortable. But I did have respect for what he posed every time he stepped on the. But I didn't feel uncomfortable. I just felt like my stuff match his stuff in a good way for me. That's how I felt. But Jay Buhner was the guy that I thought I can strike him out whenever I want if I have my do.
The one running in?
Yeah. The next question.
What was the one thing that you used to do as a routine, especially when things were going really, really well?
What I did was just, in my routine, work a little harder. And you probably say, why? Well, because the more you raise the expectations, the better you do, the more you raise your expectations. And people probably, I would try to take that game like it was no other. The more I did, the more I worked. And that was the part of my routine that probably never allowed me to settle down. I was so hard. I was a workaholic. I was a gym rat. Whatever I was doing right, I was just trying to improve even more. Because I knew that if I struck out 10 today, and you were all hyped up about it, you had in your mind, one of these days he's going to strike out 15. And if I struck out 15, oh, he might strike out 20 one day. And I got really close to 20 many times. But man, those were hard times. Those were hard times because the more success you have, the more people demand, the more people expect. And I expect it out of myself too. I didn't want to degrade what I was doing.
What was the one thing that you used to hate facing during your career for any particular reason?
The one thing that I didn't like about before I started the game was to have a delay. For whatever reason.
No, the one team that you used to hate facing.
The one team I hated to face. I tell you what, I didn't like Minnesota.
What was that?
Because Minnesota was pesky. Fucking like, guys, they were all fast.
Hunter.
All fast. They would slap the ball. They give you knuckles.
Yeah.
Those pesky guys hitting those choppers in the turf. And by the time you pick up the ball, Noma went gone. Christian Guzman, Torrey Hunter,
yeah,
Jack Jones,
Matt Lawton.
Oh man, they were pesky. Chuck Knobloch.
Yeah,
all those guys were like pesky. I hated to see those little teams that they would just slap you all over the place. And then you have like, instead of pitching against a power team like 105 pitches, and you have 10 strikeouts. If they take you deep, they take you deep. But they were going to swing the bat. No, they were going to eyeball every ball you threw. And then they will slap, they will bunt, they will make you move. And they wear you out. By the seventh inning, I was out. Wore out by those young players and pesky players. I hit it facing Minnesota.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And my last question. You want to ask that last question? Because I see your face.
No. I'm waiting to see what this is. This is like journalistic poppy right now.
Yeah.
My last question will be, in the history of baseball, to me, I think you are one of the greatest pitchers that ever played the game. I mean,
thank you. That's a great compliment.
Well, it's a fact.
But if there's any pitcher, not compared to staff, mm-hmm, talking about everything, body-wise, inning by inning, that you think you can be compared to, what you want that would be?
It's so many reasons that I shouldn't be compared and they shouldn't be compared, but if I want to really mimic someone that was really successful, then we share a record, and we were talking about that the other day. We shared that record as Tom Seaver. Tom Seaver and I think, are the only two pitchers in history that could have gone 0-20 for five straight years and still finish over 500. And that is something that really caught my attention. He always told me, you remind me of myself when we were in the Hall of Fame. And I didn't know that we had that thing in common. And that made me feel so proud, because that's what it's all about. Sometimes you're going to stumble, you're going to fail, you're going to have horrible games. But it's how you stand up and how successful are you when you stand up and you decide to go forward. And that was something that I really took pride on. It was just, yes, I had a bad game and the Yankees were my daddies today, but look out the next time. look out. I'm after you. I'm after the Yankees. I'm after everybody out there. How many times I did that? Well, my record reflects it. I could have gone 5 years in a row, 0-20, and still finished over 500. That means I was a winner. I was successful many more times than I was unsuccessful. And that is something that I can only remember about Tom Seaver. And he's a big name. You know how I know him?
You know how I know him? When I was a kid, on my Nintendo video game, he was my guy. Blow cheese by everybody.
Tom Seaver is that guy that I think I wanted to be compared. Another guy was Bob Gibson.
Yeah.
Because of the intensity and the way he pitched. I actually love watching him. I love watching Nolan Ryan. That intensity, those guys that were really intense. Brett Severhagen, I have all the respect in the world for. Brett Severhagen did something that day that I pitched in Cleveland, hurt, that nobody has ever done for a teammate.
I think Bob Gibson's probably the best comparison because he was so good that they had to lower the mound. And, like, you were as good, if not better. They didn't do anything to change the rules, but they probably should have back then. But that was because it was just a completely different game. But, Bob Gibson's probably the best comparison there.
Yeah, when it comes to approach to the game and dominance, I think Bob Gibson could be another guy. It's unfortunate we're losing so many anchors. Right. Like him and Hank Aaron and all those guys. I'm extremely sad about that because I was always looking forward to going to the Hall of Fame to stretch those guys' hands and to hear them talk, to learn from them. It's sad that we're losing so many, but there will always be plenty of them to go and get some advice from.
Mm-hmm. Well, Hall of Famer Pedro Martinez.
Yes, sir.
Future Hall of Famer David Ortiz.
Soon. Yeah.
Another episode of Call Him Poppy in the books. Thank you so much for doing this. This is actually like the fourth time that I've interviewed Pedro, by the way.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. But this one was the best one. So we hope you enjoyed it. Stay tuned for the next episode. Shout out to Nutrisystem for sponsoring. We're out of here.
See you when I see you.
Yeah.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning Shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save.